Welcome to Everyday Relationships from Focus on the Family with Dr. Greg Smalley and Susie Larson.
Welcome to today's show. We are thrilled that you have joined us. We're here every day to help you live out God's greatest commandment to love Him with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love others as you love yourself. I'm Dr. Greg Smalley, joined by author and speaker Susie Larson. Well, as always, we'll be taking your calls this hour, so doing our best to help out in any relationship situation that's going on in your life. So we'll be heading to the phones and answering some emails here in just a few minutes. So while the phone lines are open, pick up the phone. Give us a call.
Love to hear from you, 855-273-5283, 855-273-5283, or you can send us an email at everydayrelationships@focusonthefamily.com, everydayrelationships@focusonthefamily.com, and we will do our best to get to your email during today's program. And while we're getting the calls and emails lined up, Greg, we want to talk about something that every couple negotiates continually throughout marriage, and we're talking about life transitions, and maybe a couple's going from being on their own to having their first child, or it could be a move to a new location, or maybe it's a significant health issue that arises. Lots of transitions, lots of possibilities. So whatever it is in life and marriage, there's sort of a before and after aspect to it that requires some kind of adjustment. And so what do you want to say to us about that today?
Exactly what you just said, kind of these major life transitions, whether it is having a first child, getting married, moving, new job, death in the family, teenagers, emptiness, all of those. I think what, more than anything, that I've learned is that transition creates change. And some people do really well at change. Others, just at that level, really struggle. I mean, anytime you create change for people, usually what you create then is stress in unbalance. You know, I think, you know, definitely families, so a marriage, a family, it's a system. And those systems love what's called homeostasis. So they love, you know, this idea of equilibrium. And so anytime a major life transition happens, it throws the whole system into chaos. And that system works very, very hard to equalize again. And so here you've got the transition, which means the change creates that stress and imbalance, and then that is what sets up oftentimes conflict and strife. And you know, I think about when Aaron and I were leaving, we had made a decision after a lot of prayer and just good godly advice. We just really felt that we needed to be here to focus on the family. But we were leaving, you know, our community in Northwest Arkansas, and we were at John Brown University, and just, you know, loved our home and church and just all of that.
And you had a thriving ministry there too.
We did, yeah. So I mean, it was not an easy decision, but we made it in a way that we both felt good about it, and it was just the right thing to do. Just felt God's hand in it, and yet, just, you know, the moment we made the decisions, all right, let's start packing boxes, it just threw our entire family into complete chaos. And I remember one time I was, I didn't know not to do this. I'd know not to do this now. My wife is a piler, you know, but what appears to me often is chaos is really very organized in her mind. I now know that. Mm-hmm. But I thought I would be helpful, and I brought all the piles together for her. Just to look at your face, I know.
My heart rate is just going up a little bit.
Hey, and the funny part, I thought I was being all loving. Literally thought, hey, this will help her. I'll get it all on one big table, all the piles. I'm not going to mess with the piles. I'll just move them to one central location. She can work there. We can drink coffee and sing songs while she does
and
all
this.
And
hold hands.
Oh, I mean, I thought that was a given, but no, not so much. As a matter of fact, it's so, I mean, that was sort of the straw that broke the camel's back. And we ended up in this massive, massive fight. And I just remember standing there thinking, why are we fighting? I thought I was helping you. Can't you see my heart? You know, look at what I was trying to do, not what I literally did. Didn't help either. But it just, you know, in a large part of that was just the inevitability of through one of these major life transitions, just the change and the stress. And that threw our family into, it was unbalanced. And just, so that's, I think, so much of what goes on that we have to then now, how do we manage and walk through that becomes the key.
And that's such a good example of a story, because Aaron knows how to navigate those kinds of things in a normal setting. But I think what happens when you're stretched thin because of transition, it's like things that normally hit you like a Nerf arrow hit you like a steel-tipped arrow. They just
like
go in deeper.
0 to 10,
yeah,
like a 1 or a 2
feel it.
Or a 3.
It feels like a steel-tipped arrow versus something that could bounce off of you. Yeah. And so you do need a measure of grace for each other, because here she's navigating the mom role, the wife role, moving role. And so she just felt stretched, and then it hit her. And, you know, you think about that. You're stretched and you get hit. That even hurts worse. So what's a person to do then if they're feeling like that?
You know, I always tell people, and this is Aaron and I had to get to this spot as well, is that within that is always going to be spiritual warfare.
Yeah.
So don't roll your eyes at that. I'm telling you that Satan seizes the opportunities to really to create more strife, to create more chaos, and to hop on these opportunities. So we're in the garage there in total conflict. You know, he's all about, hey, how do I keep them separated? How do I keep them in disharmony? And at one point, Erin, I loved it. She did such a great job. At some point, we came back and just kind of looked at each other and just smiled and went, okay, we're not sure what just happened, but something just happened. But just to remind each other that, you know, you are not my enemy. We have an adversary. We have an enemy. But that's never her. That's never me. And it just, that sort of grounded us spiritually.
Excellent.
Going, yes, we took that opportunity then to pray. God, you know what? Hey, through all this, we trust in you. But we also know that it's not easy. You think of the children of Israel. Remember here, they're taken out miraculously. I mean, imagine what they saw coming out of Egypt in slavery, you know, with all the miracles and the plagues and the signs and then the parting of the Red Sea. So you'd think that, well, my goodness, of all people, they should be completely fine, because they know that God is all over this, obviously, I mean, very overtly. And yet you think about the many times they said, why, Moses, did you bring us out here? If it wasn't just to die, we would have been better off, you know, back in Egypt. And I think that's an example of how hard that system works to restore itself back. And within that, to your point, Susie, I think it's, we have to be aware that we are going to be more sensitive. I loved your analogy that these little Nerf darts are going to feel like they have a metal tip on them. And let's give each other grace, and let's just keep that. Let's keep reminding us. I remember one time went on a family trip when I was growing up, and it was on a boat, and we all took Dramamine, you know, just for the sickness and just so that we wouldn't. But it makes you totally irritable. So once we got to this gorgeous, you know, vacation destination, my whole family, we wanted to kill each other.
I'm sorry.
We literally were.
So
my
funny.
Sister got mad. I made some smart aleck comment. My sister turned around to kick me in like between the legs. Okay.
Oh, wow.
That's all I'm going to say. But that's okay. That's where she was going. But she kicked a metal bar that was attached to a bed that was, you know, so she didn't touch me, but she broke her toe trying to kick me.
And I bet your mercy gift was all over that.
Oh,
I'm
sure I handled that
perfectly
well. That'll teach you, you know. But finally my mom stepped in and kind of, she said to all of us, sit down, everybody. And we're all, you know, we're all moving each other. And she goes, remember, we've taken Dramamine. And we all went, oh, well, that's true. And
that
was like, yeah. So that perspective returned, and we realized it's the same thing. So when we're in the midst of the change and all that, I think having that perspective, you know, making sure that we always are taking care of ourselves. The greatest commandment, love others, love God, love others as you love yourself. So there's a way in which I've got to make sure that I'm paying attention to how I'm feeling and what I'm going through, making sure that I'm doing as much as I can to stay open and taking good care of myself. You talk so much about that, Susie. But then really, what do I need to do then for my spouse? So care for you, care for your spouse. Aaron, what do you need from me in the midst of this transition? It's a great question. And then make sure that we're caring for our marriage as well. It's so easy as we get overwhelmed to ignore then the relationship. I think as we do all those things, it'll really help us
Great advice.
Yeah.
And you said this so many times, to really do the process ahead of time, to really get a sense and make sure this is you're together, it's a win-win, and it's God's plan. Because,
yeah.
You know, someone once said, an unknown captivity is so often more preferable than a known captivity is more preferable than an unknown freedom, right? And so we like to be captive. If we don't know where we're going, it's so easy to do with the Israelites. I want to go back to Egypt. And you can blame each other if you don't get in sync ahead of time. You're blowing through this thing. I'm kind of dragging along. And then you're in dealing with the opposition. That's when the blame game starts. But don't you think you can stand stronger when you're like, we've confirmed this is an opposition and we are pursuing the unknown freedom, even if it's hard? I mean, it just seems like it'd be easier to stay in step when you kind of get your confirmations ahead of time.
Completely. And this is really what my wife, Erin, as she wrote that book, The Wholehearted Wife, really talks about, that caring for you, caring for your spouse, and caring for your marriage. And I just would encourage you, get Focus on the Family. Call today at 800-A-FAMILY, because if you make a donation of any amount today, right now, do that, then as our way of saying thank you, we will send you Erin's book, The Wholehearted Wife.
Wholehearted Wife. Boy, it's a great, great book. Well, we're going to take your calls and emails next. So if you've got a relationship question, here is the number, 855-273-5283, 855-273-5283, or email everydayrelationships@focusonthefamily.com. This is Focus on the Family's Everyday Relationships with Dr. Greg Smalley. I'm Susie Larson. Thanks for tuning in today. We're taking your calls and your emails right now. If you've got a relationship question we can help you with, here's the number, 855-273-5283, 855-273-5283. Okay, Greg, we've got an email here, and this listener writes, my ex-wife has borderline personality disorder. 8 years ago, she was in a very extensive treatment program, which was really helping. But today, she denies the issue exists. I have found several resources that have really helped me, but the part I'm still missing is how to help my kids, ages 10 and 6. They are deeply affected by my wife's mental illness. I want them to have a great relationship with their mom, and I'm very intentional not to put my ex-wife down. At the same time, I recognize that avoiding the issue with the kids is not the best answer either. Adding to the complexity is the fact that I only have them every other weekend. Given the limited custody issues, what can I do to help? Specifically, would you know of any resources for young kids with BPD parents?
Yeah, great question. I like what he's saying. He's striking that balance between, I don't want to just not talk to my kids, but I don't want to put my ex-wife down. I think that's a great balance. And so it seems to me that his heart is really in the right place. And I think that tone will really guide the discussions. I imagine he creates a safe place for his kids to talk. And so I think all of that really does sound like that he's at the right place. The good news is the research really does support what he's saying to when we keep this information from the kids. Really what happens is they grow to not trust us, or they're so confused. It's always better to begin to along the way, slowly, subtly seed them with information. One that says that I'm not here to deceive you, and you know, we all have issues, and this happens to be mom's issue. And so I think that he's doing the right thing. So it's not a question of if he tells them, it's when and how. And that's what I hear him asking. Yeah, so it's 10 and 6-year-old. So obviously he's going to keep that in mind and make sure that he's giving out the right kind of information for the 6-year-old. It might be, you know, there's times when mommy's going to, you know, be sleeping, or she's going to be frustrated, she's going to be upset, and here's kind of a little bit of why that's happening. And so just give a little bit of information to the 6-year-old. For the 10-year-old, a little bit more, to the point where I think there's some great resources. Like, I looked it up, and there's one called Wishing Wellness. So it's a workbook for children of parents with mental illness. There's one called I Am Not Alone, A Teen's Guide to Living with a Parent Who Has a Mental Illness. I would encourage them, keep looking online in, you know, there's, again, everybody's written about everything. So there's got to be some really, really good resources beyond those two.
And just quick, Greg, we've had Amy Simpson on the show, Troubled Minds, remember?
Yeah,
and she's kind of become an expert, and she grew up with a parent with mental illness. She's got some pretty significant things to say.
Exactly. So there's good. So I think you start with this idea that dad's gonna have, you know, we're gonna talk about hard things, but at the same time, I think it's an amazing opportunity for him to teach them from a very young age that we all have issues, that we all have problems. This happens to be mom's. This is mine. You will have issues. It's not about the issue. Now I understand borderline personality disorder. I mean, there's definitely some uniquenesses there that's going to be helpful for them to really learn and to understand. But it's a great opportunity to teach them. It's not the baggage per se. It's how we handle and what do we do. And this is an opportunity. How do we treat people who are different than us? How do we treat people who have problems like this one? So that's a great opportunity. Think again. Remember how we talked about with having the talk about sex with your kids? Think in the same way you want to apply those same principles, that you want your kids to feel safe, that they can talk to you about anything. That's why you don't want to deceive them and leave them in the dark, because they'll kids are so perceptive. They'll fill in the blanks. Maybe mom's just mad at me, so maybe it's me. And that's what he's really trying to guard against, is not allowing them to have to fill in the stuff. You know, fill in the blanks with their own answers.
Well, I appreciate that, too. I notice in his tone, it's like, you know, the two extremes would be to not say anything, in which case they're going to get older and they'll lose respect for you, too, because you haven't said anything. So he's not proposing that. But on the other extreme, if it was a nasty divorce, I mean, what divorce really isn't just so painful, to mix any of his angst with his wife around the mental illness could alienate the kids when he's trying to explain that. And that could be so devastating to everybody. So to walk that narrow path of not dishonoring the spouse, but caring for the kids enough to give them information. I so appreciate his question, because that's what I hear him asking, and that shows a lot of honor, because I think that is a narrow path.
I like that. You're right. In that environment, see, that feels safe. And so you're trying to establish this safe place that your kids know you're going to be honest, going to be real, you're going to have conversations. I'm going to give you appropriate little bit of information along the way, but then also really treat their questions and honor those questions and let it be an okay place for them to say, what does that mean? Does that mean that I'll have the same thing? And, you know, that's where the kids will turn to. What does that mean? And am I at risk? Or what do I say to mom? I mean, in a perfect world, he would sit down with her and they would actually agree on, here's what we want to tell the kids. I mean, it's her story to tell. But again, I mean, through a divorce, I don't know where that stands.
And her denial, though, can't really dictate
exactly
how he handles it, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. So if they can't agree on, here's how we want to say this and when we want to say it, then he always has in the back that I'm going to honor her and be real. And I'll take them into a counselor, and you guys can talk about that with the counselor as well.
Okay, let's try to squeeze another email in real quick here before the break. And if you need to carry it over, Greg, go ahead. This next email concerns a dating couple who seems bound to go their separate ways. She writes, "My boyfriend and I are best friends. We've been together on and off for 9 years. I don't want to be together anymore for good. Yet because we're so close and comfortable with one another, it seems we can't truly stick with a breakup, especially because he's deeply in love with me, and I end up feeling guilty about leaving him. How can we truly call it quits without losing our cherished friendship? Sometimes I feel like I should just stay with him because he loves me so much."
No.
No.
No, no.
That's what I was going to say. Please, no.
Let me throw another
no
in there. You know, one, and with all due respect, so I don't mean that in a dishonoring way. Really, 9 years is way too long to be dating someone. This relationship should have progressed long before that. And that's something. And so you need to really analyze what that's about. How can we break up is the very worst question, because you have no control over him. What you need to really do is, how do I end this relationship with honor and respect? You know, she talks about how, you know, we can't truly call it quits without losing our cherished friendship. That's absolutely impossible in the short term. You've got to look at this as seasons. One, you can't. That would be cruel to try to preserve a friendship as well as breaking his heart. You're going to break his heart. That you need that to be okay. And let him move on. You need to move on. This is keeping him and you from finding that person that you're going to spend the rest of your life with. And, you know, because we love each other, I want to stay with him. I mean, that's no, you don't want to stay with someone for that reason. And so I would definitely, and this set some firm boundaries, make it very clear. And then you've got to have no contact for a while, for a season. You know, this isn't a so that we can move back to be friends down the road. Well, come on, you're going to move on. He's going to move on. Even when you get married, this you wouldn't have this friendship anyway. So let this go. Learn from it. What have you learned from a 9-year relationship that didn't progress? I mean, there's a lot you can learn and take away from this.
We had Dr. Cloud on a while back on necessary endings. You might want to check out his book because this sounds like a need for a necessary ending, right?
I agree.
Yeah, we got more emails to go through. We'd love to hear from you. If you've got a question you want to call in, 855-273-5283, 855-273-5283. Don't go away. We'll be right back. This is Focus on the Family's Everyday Relationships with Dr. Greg Smalley. I'm Susie Larson. Glad to have you along today. We're taking your calls and your emails. If you've got a relationship question we can help you with, here is the number, 855-273-5283, 855-273-5283. We also get emails if that's easier for you, everydayrelationships@focusonthefamily.com. And Greg, our next listener is experiencing a lot of pain in her marriage, and she writes, I learned 4 years ago that my husband has been unfaithful for the entirety of our 35-year marriage. As of today, he's still denying the adultery. My question to you is this. In your experience, when this degree of denial occurs, as a couple, can we work through the issues? For me, the worst part of this has been the last 4 years. First, the reality of the unfaithfulness, and then the hurt, which is continuing since he doesn't seem to care enough to show remorse. I mean, I feel like a knife in my heart as I read this. It's so painful. Yeah. What do you say?
Well, that's tough. So if what she's saying is true, and we don't have him here but if we're going simply off what she's saying, which is that he has actually literally been unfaithful for all those years of their marriage, no, I would say to her, one, I've seen God do the most amazing miracles, leading those marriage intensives. I mean, so many times we dealt with infidelity. And I've just seen God just do incredible things, and for those couples to use what happened, and they have stronger marriages now. So that is 100,000,000% possible. As a matter of fact, now part of Focus on the Family is that intensive ministry called the National Institute of Marriage. So give us a call, 800-8-FAMILY, if you need that. If he's willing to go to that, great. What I'm hearing you say is that the marriage feels so incredibly unsafe to you because there's no honesty. He's not taking responsibility for anything. So you can be well taken care of. So I always, part of the show, we say this all the time. You can deal with you. That's your responsibility. You can be so well cared for. However, the marriage, if he's not owning this, and if he's not saying this happened, I'm taking full responsibility, here's what happened. You know, the hallmark of affairs are deception and secrecy. And you think about the verses that talk about, you know, our sin being like darkness, and in Jesus, how he's the light. And you see, you need all that to come out into the light. To rebuild a marriage after infidelity truly requires two people willing to really work at this and have a long-term vision going. This is not a short-term fix. There's a ton that went in to on both sides that led us to this place, and we're going to both work hard at this, and we're going to let God do that miracle, and our hearts are going to be open, and it's going to be messy and ugly at times and great and confusing. But ultimately, I've just seen couples just so recover. Not just recover, they rebuild this amazing new marriage. But that's not going to happen if deception and deceit and dishonesty and irresponsibility are the hallmarks that you're building this new relationship off of.
And that's what's so important, Greg. I'm thinking, you know, enduring that if your spouse cheats once is devastating. But for her, I can imagine she's wondering, was any of this real? If you've been unfaithful from the beginning, is any of it real? And you're not showing remorse now. So what would her next steps be if he's not showing remorse? Because he's devastated her to the deepest degree. I mean, it seems, how long is it going to take for him to rebuild trust? Well, at first he has to at least show humility and remorse. So what does she do?
Well, I think she's realistic that rebuilding a marriage requires two people fully 100% engaged at rebuilding that. That's not happening. That's not going to happen because he's not engaged. So realistically, her job is to continue to take care of herself, to get the help that she needs. I mean, she's going through Satan is attacking her mind. This is about you. You weren't good enough, beautiful enough. See, if you'd been better, if you just would have measured up a little bit more, you see, I mean, so she can fight all that. She can be well taken care of as a individual. Realistically, if he's not going to work on the marriage, she needs to then set some pretty firm, clear boundaries saying, I love you and I will fight for this marriage. It's going to take two of us. And if you're not committed to doing this, then I'm not just going to sit here. And because that's abusive. I mean, what's going on? That truly is abusive. And she needs to, tough love means that I love you enough not to tolerate this. I'm not going to teach you that it's okay to lie to me anymore. And so to set those boundaries, that's hard. But if this is going to work, he needs to get that wake up call that he needs. I don't know what's going on. I mean, good Lord. Fella, you found a woman who's been willing to stand by your side through your infidelity. So you should be on your knees thanking God and begging her and doing everything you can to win her back. Fortunately, that's not going on. She needs to set those boundaries.
Set the boundaries. God bless you. Get some friends around you. Get people praying for you. And we wish you and bless you with God's best. This is Focus on the Family's Everyday Relationships. We love to hear from you. This is our last next segment to take calls. So if you've got a question, now is the time to pick up the phone, 855-273-5283, 855-273-5283. We'll be right back in just a moment.
So my husband and I,
this is Focus on the Family's Everyday Relationships with Dr. Greg Smalley. I'm Susie Larson. We're taking your calls today at 855-273-5283. Again, 855-273-5283. If you'd like some help solving a dilemma, we'd love to hear from you.
Well, you know, Susie, before we jump into a call or take on another email, you know, one of the things that I'd like to talk just a little bit about is a transition here that we're going to go through with Everyday Relationships that we'll be heading into starting next Monday, so July 14th. And so, you know, for this hour that you're listening to now, that's really going to become, right, the kind of a second hour of your amazing show. But I want to talk a little bit about why we're doing that. And it's not because you've been mean to me. Because I know lots have wondered, you know. Just kidding, totally kidding. You know, for me, the Focus on the Family it brought me out here to Colorado Springs to really run all of the marriage efforts that we do, the parenting efforts that we have going on, as well as our what's called Boundless, so that's our ministry to single young adults. And so it's really, I'm the vice president of what's called family ministry. So marriage,
pretty significant.
And single, I guess. But that's a lot. And, you know, even before, once we started the show, actually even there was a promotion in there and I took on more responsibility. And, you know, for me, I love doing the show. This has absolutely been such a professional highlight, you know, of my career. Just getting to do this with you has been such a joy. I love the way that we can interact. You're like my sister, and you know, even though you pick on me a lot, I still, you know, care for you. And we just had a lot of fun. The listeners, just the questions, their willingness to call in with very, very serious, you know, heart-wrenching stories and questions and allow us to really to speak into their life has been an absolute thrill for me. And I hate that I really need to give that up. But the reality for me is, in order to really to do my job here at Focus, which is a full-time job, to then also try to do, you know, my job as a co-host with you, as a host with you, live everyday radio is just impossible.
It's its own full-time job. Greg. I mean, really, it's like trying to dabble in brain surgery. You know what I mean? You can't dabble in something that requires so much. So you were doing
to stay at the, you know, Holiday Inn Express in order to really pull all of that off. So to do all that well, it was impossible. And that's why really for me, as I talked to my boss and talked to our president, Jim Daly, so we really looked at it, you know, and kind of prayed this through, not kind of, but we did prayed this through in terms of the right decision. We determined that I would need to really give up hosting the everyday relationships. And so I hate that because I've so enjoyed it. But I really do believe it's the right thing. So I just wanted to make sure that everybody knows that the real reason for this is just to do all of what I need to do job wise, you know, to preparing for a show, daily live shows. That was half of my day. I just couldn't get everything done and definitely wasn't feeling successful. Well, in the things that I need to be doing.
Well, Greg, there is a season and time and season for everything under the sun. And as we pray all the time and commit this to the Lord. And I do believe God's accomplished great things in the last year and a half. And the needs of family are greater than ever. And so God is putting you where he has you. And so, you know, it is bittersweet because we've had a great run of it. And so just to be clear, Everyday Relationships is going away. Yeah. And so beginning next Monday, Live the Promise will go to 2 hours. But we do have a bonus because whenever it works, most of the time we're going to have Greg on every Wednesday, and so you can harass him once a week. It's perfect. But I love you and
call
Aaron.
In and make sure you say that
how much
you like
love
me better.
Greg. That's right, because you probably
use
do like him
better.
Yes, use better. You know, and more. But you know, I adore both you and Aaron and your family, and just have so enjoyed times around on your deck with your precious family, and so we've made a great lifelong friendship, and
absolutely.
I honor your decision. I know it's hard, and we'll sure miss it, but we'll all miss you, and so I'm glad that we get to have you on Wednesdays whenever it works. The next Wednesday you're going to be traveling, but you'll hear from Greg pretty regularly.
Absolutely, I'm excited. At least get to do this one day a week.
Yes, you know,
so
exactly.
I'm grateful for that.
And I'll try hard not to pick on you so much. I don't feel bad now. I only got you once a week. I got to be nice.
Yes, that was the real goal all along.
So, well, a listener named Evelyn called in and said that her husband doesn't communicate well, and it turns her off and wonders what she should do. We've just got a few minutes before we go to break. Greg, wondering if you have some advice for Evelyn.
Anytime I hear that, it makes total sense, and especially for women, there's such a longing to be known and to know, and I think that's important for all of us, not just women. I think to have a great marriage, we need to know our spouse and willing to be known, put ourselves out there, share what's going on. So that makes sense that's gone beyond a frustration to a real turnoff. I think always we talk about this. Spend some time, just first and foremost, what is this about? What's the deeper emotion for me? Is it that I'm feeling rejected or I'm feeling unknown or just whatever it is? Because that's what you're ultimately going to want to share with your husband. So take a little bit of time just to figure out what is this? The fact that he doesn't communicate pushes all kinds of buttons. What name would I put to those? And that's going to serve you well. I would encourage you just to remember, men and women have very different communication styles and needs. And for a man to communicate often, we need to have a purpose and a point, something to solve, something to fix, a question to answer, whatever. Or we see no need. This could be based on his personality. You know, as an introvert, I'll probably use a whole fewer words than my wife. And, you know, if I'm stressed out, I don't want to talk. And just notice his world. Is there a reason for that? Sometimes I know for as guys, we get very overwhelmed with a woman's ability to multitask. You're holding a cell phone, you're checking email, you're talking to me, you're dealing with the kids, or you've made your communication all about administrating your marriage. That also happens. Again, women are so great at multitasking. It's a strength. Just notice some of those. Men love to be doing activity when talking. So that's a part of what you can do as well. Like, men hate to do the face-to-face coffee thing. We just don't like that. So get me driving in a car or take me on a walk side by side. Guys will open up a little bit more when doing those kinds of things.
And truly, when a wife gets to a point where she says this or this is a turn off, I think it's just good to look at what is a turn on and what you do appreciate and love about them, because you zero in for too long. you sort of just make up your mind about some things. So maybe focus, too, on the things that you love about them. But when we come back for the wrap, we'll have time for one last question. This is Focus on the Family's Everyday Relationships, and we will be right back.
Make every day count with your media choice.
You're tuned in to Focus on the Family's Everyday Relationships with Dr. Greg Smalley. I'm Susie Larson, wrapping up our time today with one last email, Greg. And this listener writes, I have three teenage daughters that I'm raising alone. I'm working 40-plus hours a week and doing the household chores, which leave me exhausted. To make matters worse, the girls are always fighting with each other. They have a tendency to gang up on one of the girls and exclude her. Typically, it's the young two against the oldest. What can I do to bring back sanity to our situation?
Ooh. Well, I tell you what. Excuse me. See, I'm all choked up now.
Mm.
Yeah, I would. I'm picking on what she said, that she's working 40 plus hours a week doing the household chores. I'm hearing that she's doing it all. That's not acceptable. That's unacceptable. I would not tolerate that on any level. You guys are a team. You're a family. Everybody needs to be doing their part. One of the things that I would encourage her to do, sit down and have a family meeting, not discussing these things right off the bat, but more of a vision casting. Who are we as a family? What's important to us? How do we want to treat each other? How do we function as a team? Almost really what they're trying to do is to create a family mission statement. I mean, I hate it sounds all businessy, but really, you pull your girls. I don't know how long that this has been a single parent situation. I mean, they could still be reeling from the impacts of either a divorce or the loss of their father. I don't know. I don't know the situation. But I think through that, they need to really redefine who we are as a family within these circumstances. And they're creating an identity. And that's going to start from identifying what's most important to us. What are the core values? How do we want to treat each other? What about work? Girls, I love you and I will work hard for you and I want to provide, but I can't do this alone. So what's not going to work for me is a total loss, or our team here is losing, is for me to do it all. And really capture them and get them a part of creating, okay, who are we as an identity? What are we about? What are our core values? Write that up. Throw that on the wall. And so that they know you've inspired them into something bigger, and then get tactical with them about, okay, who's going to be doing what? You know, you're doing dishes, and they agree and rotate that. I mean, figure that part out. Keep them all engaged in this process. The more engaged they are in this, the more likely they are to follow through. And I would share a word picture of what it's like when they fight and gang up and I'm exhausted and I come home to that. This is to be a sanctuary. This needs to be the safest place on earth. If you guys want to do that, you go outside. So just know, as you bicker, you're going outside. I'm staying here.
That's right.
I'm not going to do that.
I'm
going to
light my scented candle.
Exactly.
The neighbors get to watch you bicker.
Yes, right. But I'm telling you, this will all come from a spot that we've agreed on who we are as a family. And then do some stuff together to bond, to build your identity.
Yeah.
I think that'll help this.
That's great. It's like there's an inequity right now. Overwork for her, and they're overfighting, and so to bring a balance back, well, God bless you. Well, thanks so much for tuning in today, and thanks to you who are part of today's program. We appreciate you so very much. You can call us anytime, 855-273-5283. Join us next time as we talk about the most important relationships in your life. This is Focus on the Family's Everyday Relationships.